You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
This is the Oil Spills Podcast. We're recording on Tuesday, November 5, 2019, between the Arizona and the St. Louis games. So we get to see St. Louis Stanley Cup champs defending variety tomorrow. I'm with Jim Matheson and Rob Tichkowski, beat writers for the Edmonton Sun and the Edmonton Journal, covering the Edmonton Oilers. Of course, the Oilers played their first home game coming back from a road trip down east. You know, the Pittsburgh game, Mike Smith had one of, what, six performances by an Oilers goaltender where he stops 50 shots in history. Obviously, they don't have Mike Smith in net. If they have Cam Talbot from last year in net, then, you know, the Oilers lose that game. And on last night's, the Arizona Coyotes come in, play a very aggressive trap-style game, and the Oilers can't seemingly get around that very often, if ever, have their pockets picked all the time. What have you been seeing these last few games? I know they opened their roadie against Detroit and definitely came out flat in that one, rebounded against Columbus, and then pulled one out of the fire in Pittsburgh, and now we have the Arizona game, which they lost in overtime.
I'd say they've played one good game in about their last five, and that's what against Columbus. They didn't play very well against Florida. They lost a game at home. Didn't play, you know, were outplayed by Pittsburgh, got a win because of Smith. Got a point last night, didn't play all that great. Played okay in the second half. What they are doing is getting points this year, even when they don't play well in some instances. So they're keeping, you know, their record looking quite tidy at 2-4-2. But if you're the coach, you're looking at the team and say, okay, didn't play all that great in Pittsburgh, didn't play all that well last night, gave the puck away a lot, got 3 points out of four somehow. But, you know, I'm sure that Dave Tippett is telling his team, look, we got to play a little bit better in terms of a 60-minute game, more than one game in a row, and that was in Columbus.
Yeah, they definitely need to be better. They had the great start, which was fantastic, but over their last, you know, eight or nine games, they're just a 500 team. And you know, a 500 team over the course of 82 games gets you 82 points, and it's not enough. So, you know, they gave themselves that insurance at the start, which we all talked about how huge that was. It would allow them to weather some storms, and they haven't really hit a storm yet, but they're trending in the opposite direction. Like, they're trending downward as opposed to gaining momentum. Like Matty was saying, in their last few games, they've come out flat. In seven of their last nine games, they've been held to two or fewer goals. And that's glaring in the way the NHL is going now with the, you know, a trending more towards offense. You know, they're structured enough that they're staying in these games and grinding out these points, but you have to score in today's National Hockey League. And, you know, I don't know if that's a byproduct of the system they're playing or that they're not getting a whole bunch of secondary scoring, although they've had three straight games now where somebody other than the big three has kicked one in. So, you know, it remains to be seen who they are, but I think who they are right now is kind of what we're going to see as a 500 team, halfway decent team with some flaws in it, which doesn't make them a lot different from a lot of the other middle of the pack teams.
I think their power play early in the season masked the fact that they weren't that great 5-on-5.
Yeah.
Got them a lot of goals early. Power play hasn't been so good the last half dozen games, and they're not scoring. And because they don't get enough 5-on-5 scoring apart from McDavid and Draisaitl. So, because most of James Neal's goals are on the power play, all but two, I think. Maybe two or three. So, yeah, it's tough to knock a team as 10-4-2, But the division they're playing in right now in the Pacific is the most competitive of all the divisions.
And they haven't played very many yet.
As the sixth place team is only like, you know, 3 points or so behind the Oilers. So they have to keep their head above water and win some games and have to score more goals. And Rob pointed out that they are getting some secondary scoring, but I think they were lucky last night to get a point, and they were lucky in Pittsburgh to get 2 points.
Well, I mean, and that luck is coming because of goaltending. And, I mean, obviously last night's they got that late goal, Kaitan Haswell, originally credited to Zach Cassian. But, you know, I guess that's – is that three games in a row now where we've had a bottom six forward kick in a goal? So at least there's that, because there was none, obviously, for the first dozen games. Mm-hmm. So if you're trying to find a positive here, it's not just Draisaitl and McDavid doing all the scoring. And if you're going to have a game where you have more than scoring more than two goals, you're going to have a, you know, like a five goal, six goal game. Of course, you're going to expect Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl to factor in a lot of those. At the same time, though, now that we have guys other than McDavid and Draisaitl scoring, that's a good thing. Because it's like the rest of the NHL, they're catching up. It's the beginning of the year. Everybody's getting their cobwebs out. The Oilers had a great start. Some teams didn't have a great start. The Coyotes have had a good start to the season too, among others. But anyway, here we are. We're heading into November. 3 weeks from now, we're going to know where teams are at with that magical U.S. Thanksgiving, are you in the playoffs or not point.
Except the St. Louis Blues were not in the playoffs last year at Thanksgiving in the Stanley Cup. True. So that's an outlier.
Yeah.
But yeah, you're right. The games, the divisional games are the most important thing. They played a lot of games against the Eastern Conference, not very many against the Pacific. And I guess could have been worse last night. They could have lost the game and Arizona would have only been 2 points behind and closing fast with two games in hand. So they got a point out of it, and that's the important thing. And they did beat LA, and they did beat Vancouver, to, you know, Pacific teams to start the season. So they've been pretty good against the Pacific Division. And I think the key is they've said all along is just to try not to play more than two games that you don't like. And that's two now that they've played where, you know, the goalie stole them a win and they didn't play that well last night and got a tie. So I think it behooves them to play well next game, but I don't think it should be any problem. Last time Washington came in, the Oilers beat Washington. Now the Blues are coming in and they're the Cup champs. I don't think the motivational aspect of it should be a problem. And St. Louis plays the night before in Calgary, as most teams seem to do this year. The teams play in Calgary and then come to Edmonton on a back-to-back.
Another thing that's changed this year for the Oilers as well is their penalty kill. I mean, it's a lot better than last year.
Especially because the goaltenders are making more saves.
Yeah,
that's a big part of it. They brought in some, you know, so-called PK specialists, but you're also still seeing a lot of the same guys who were out there last year. So, goaltending is everything, right? If you have it, you know, you don't think too much about it. If you don't, it's this glaring weakness that you know that sucks the life out of a team. And even yesterday, you know, Koskinen lets in that pretty weak wrist shot from the top of the circle. I mean, Draisaitl took up some heat for that giveaway, but at the end of the day, it's a long wrist shot that beat you short side low. So, you know, but he recovered from that. It wasn't the beginning of the end. He made a handful of really big saves after that to keep them from falling behind in a game where they deserved, like, you know, as was the case with Mike Smith in Pittsburgh, you know, they deserved to lose that game 6-1. And yesterday, you know, it wasn't that bad, but, you know, Koskinen, you know, kept them in it, gave them a chance to steal the point late, which they've done on a couple of occasions here. So, you know, that's, you know, as much as the power play was masking some issues early on, the goaltending is also not masking them. He's part of the team, but they're relying really heavily on their goaltending.
I think the first test of Dave Tippett's, we're going to give both goaltenders a shot here and have them fresh, will be against St. Louis. It's the Cup champions. They lost. They got a point with Koskinen. He played good, not great. They come back with Smith against St. Louis.
Smith's coming off like a 51 save epic performance, and he doesn't start the next game.
He says, I should have made one more save, I guess, to get that start against Arizona.
Yeah. There's some seriousness in that too. I mean, he's a competitor. He thought he should have, you know, he warranted another start. If you're going to break that mold or pattern, the 51 save sensational effort might have been the way to do it.
I think what I would do is I would play Mike Smith against St. Louis and play Koskinen against Jersey.
Yeah.
And then see what happens in the road. You get two games. You can play one against one team and one against the other.
Now, Smith wasn't here last year, obviously. Mikko Koskinen was. Obviously, Koskinen is not playing every single game like he did down the stretch last year. Obviously, that has to be playing a factor. Is there anything else Koskinen is doing differently or what's different this year than it was, say, the last half of last year?
Well, it helps when the team in front of you is playing a little better, a little more structured. You know, there was always that sort of that cycle where, you know, he would let in a crappy goal. The Oilers defense would give the other team a free tap in at the back door, and then they'd give one up on the PK. And then suddenly there's your three goals and there's your losing, and everybody's confidence is down. And you know, they're blaming the goalie because that's the easiest guy to blame. If the defense in front of you and the forwards, you know, they're coming back as a five-man group and keeping a lot of the shots to the outside and not giving up, you know, the five-star chances, all goalies, you know, their save percentage is going to go up. They're going to look better. Like, how many goalies have Edmonton imported from, you know, Arizona or Los Angeles who had good numbers on a good checking team and have come here and have not looked very good at all, right? Jason LaBarbera and those types. So, you know, what matters as much is how the team in front of you plays, and the Oilers are getting, you know, better work on that front. And in addition, Koskinen is also better just from not being overworked and having another year of experience in the NHL.
I think the Oilers feed off Mike Smith's swagger. And I think the team should have a little more swagger except for the top two guys, McDavid and Draisaitl, go into the games more saying, we're better than you guys. Our record is indicative. We're better. They're still that feeling, I think, in the Oilers, they'll play Dave's Tippett system, but are they really any better than the other teams? And I think they could use some of Mike Smith's swagger when they play the games and play better for a full 60 and instead of just getting through the games and keeping them close. And if you win, great. And if you get a point, great.
I think it's too bad that, you know, at least what I'm watching interviews on television or, you know, seeing what the comments are in your guys' stories from the likes of McDavid and Draisaitl, those guys aren't, you know, they're trying so hard to downplay stuff to the public. Like, I don't know what's going on behind the scenes. Maybe they're more charismatic behind closed doors with their team. I would think so. If you're the captain, you're the top two scorers on the team. But, you know, you're talking about Mike Smith's fire and charisma, and that's what the team is feeding off of. What about McDavid and Draisaitl and the top line guys?
Yeah, it would have to be better behind closed doors because, well, yeah, what we see is just pretty bland, you know, almost disinterested.
They're like, they can't wait to finish the interview.
Yeah.
Every single time.
Yeah.
They know Draisaitl just can't wait to stop talking to you.
Yeah.
That's what it seems like to me.
Neither one. It would be nice if either one of them liked talking about them, how well they're individually they're playing.
I mean, obviously, McDavid, when you talk to him,
this isn't basketball, I guess, where you're LeBron or Steph Curry or somebody like that, where you can talk about, yeah, I'm playing really good. The mentality is, we're playing well as a team.
Well, when you talked to McDavid at the beginning of the year for that Q&A article you did, he was fine talking about everything but hockey. I mean, I don't know. Is it the pressure? It's just them. Is it dealing with wrapping your mind around being, you know, on an NHL team, never mind being a superstar? Or whatever.
I don't know. I don't think he's. I think he's had.
He's 22.
I think he's had to talk so often about how great he is. He doesn't much like talking about himself. He's like Crosby, you know, in that vein.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I guess, you know, you have to drag out the superlatives from other people when you talk about Draisaitl and McDavid.
Yeah, I mean, and you are who you are. I mean, you can't change your personality. You know, obviously you guys are down at the rink every day, not me. Hockey players are hockey players. They're not basketball players. They're not, well, PK Subban being an outlier, I suppose. But he's not exactly talking about how terrific he is or anything like that. We're talking about pro athletes.
Yeah, you just choose whether or not you want to be outgoing and engaging, and they choose not to be. It's obviously deliberately boring, and you know, we're not going to give you anything. And that's fine if that's how they want to be, but you're projecting the image of your team. And I remember when the Oilers were good a few years ago, you know, you had a guy like Patrick Maroon who would stand up and he would talk about the team swagger and the team's confidence, and you know, that it filters through the room, and that was kind of the, you know, the image that they projected. Connor will give you, you know, a really bland answer to a question, and then as soon as there's a pause in the thing, he's gone. Like he just doesn't like doing it, and that's, you know, it's not really a quality you want in a captain, if you know, from the perspective of speaking to the media. But you know, he's got to be the captain, and that's all there is to it, and that's how he chooses to deal with, you know, speaking to the essentially the public. So there's really nothing you can do about it. I would imagine that behind the scenes he's a fiery guy and a talkative guy and a, you know, a funny guy in the room and everything, but to the public he just gives you nothing, and it's on purpose. It's not like he doesn't have anything to say.
No, I understand. You also don't want to be giving your competition something to put in the bulletin board or something to think about.
If Connor McDavid said something, Connor McDavid's good enough, wouldn't matter if it's on the bulletin board, I don't think.
Yeah. Well, he has to guard against every single thing he says goes nuclear. Like, he's Connor McDavid. If he says one slightly thing that could be perceived as negative about how Arizona plays, boom, it's on, you know, lead story on TSN and Hockey Night in Canada, and ESPN's calling him, and, you know, well, no, not them. They don't care about hockey, but, you know, anything he says is immediately huge. So from the very young age, he was cautioned, watch what you say, don't give him anything. And he's very good at it. He's a smart guy. You have to be smart to play that role, and he does it very well.
Because you could call an organization a Mickey Mouse organization, yes. Right?
Yeah, you could say, like, Arizona, you suck, and you've never been any good, and nobody likes watching you play, and, you know.
Well, wait, isn't that Arizona talking about the Oilers, though?
I don't know. That's Arizona, yeah. They've missed the playoffs 7 years in a row, and you know, that's the style they play, although they do have more offensive players.
They're getting
forward
there, yeah.
Now than they've had in the past. And certainly Rick Tocchet's a really good coach, as Dave Tippett was a good coach there too. So I don't know. It's, in today's game, you're kind of torn, I think, as a team. Do you want to be boring and win, or do you want to be have some offense and lose 4-3? I don't know. I mean, I think the fan doesn't care as long as the W's pop up on the board, to be honest. And at the end of the season, you're in the playoffs.
Yeah, and if they ever did make the playoffs, it's a style, you know, unbalanced scoring aside, that will help you win in the playoffs. You know, these tight checking 2-1 games that come down to the final 5 minutes, or you know, holding out a lead or coming back, or they have that stuff. You know, they just need to sort out, you know, getting more than three guys to score all their goals, and you know, maybe shoring up some of their special teams again, because you know they were making all their hay off the power play early on.
You know, one thing we haven't talked about recently, at least in my memory, is Leon Draisaitl himself and his performance thus far this year. He's been at the top or near the top of the scoring list in the NHL all season. Here he is taking, you know, center stage, being the catalyst for the Oilers' offense on days when Connor McDavid, maybe he's having a bit of an off day. Mm-hmm. Leon is able to come in and be the guy. And not every team has that.
He's been incredibly consistent. Like, they've played 16 games now, and he's been on the score sheet in every single one except the two games where they got shut out. I mean, that speaks volumes. I think he's got, you know, more points than, like, Connor slowed down a little bit. Like, he came out of the gate like gangbusters, and I think the adrenaline wore off a little bit. And now the off season of not being able to train like he wanted to is caught up a little bit. Like, it's still great by mortal standards, or good by mortal standards, but by his own standards, he's tailed off a little bit. But Draisaitl's doing it all. Like, the guy is, you know, he's up with the league lead in points, you know, league lead in goals, league lead in minutes played. He kills penalties. He takes faceoffs. He's only missed 4 games out of the last 334. Like, he's durable. He's, you know, out there in a killing a 5-on-3. Like, it's, you know, for a guy that, you know, remember when he first broke into the league, they said he maybe didn't skate well enough to play, and he got, you know, sent down. He's been a, just an incredible addition to the team. He's every, I wouldn't say every bit as Connor, as good as Connor McDavid, but as good a, as, you know, as good a second as you're going to get.
That's the best Oiler draft choice in probably 20 years.
Yeah.
Because he wasn't the first pick overall.
No kidding. He wasn't dropped on their lap. Third. And it wasn't obvious.
He was third. He wasn't the first. So, and I think he's good. He's, he wears his talent as Malkin wears his talent in Pittsburgh with Crosby. And until Crosby got hurt, people just said, ah, Malkin's on the team too, but it's Crosby's team. And then when Crosby would get hurt, Malkin would take over the team. And you don't want to wish any injury on Connor McDavid, but maybe the rest of the league would realize how good Leon Draisaitl is if Connor missed 3 weeks or something like that. And then Leon had to carry the team by himself. You know, and that's just the way it is when you're playing with on a team with McDavid, as it was for Messier playing on a team, I guess, with Gretzky, you know.
And, you know, Shirelli takes a lot of bullets, well-deserved, but for locking Leon up for 8.5, if, you know, if he would have done a bridge deal and he was sitting there in the office right now looking for a new contract this year.
Yeah, very different Oilers team.
You're looking at $10, $11 million, and that's, you know, it's really hard to build a team around that, so. You know, same with Koskinen. Shirelli kind of makes these speculative contracts, like Oscar Klefbom and Koskinen, where he gambles that the guy is going to be good. So he's, you know, Koskinen, this jury's still out on that. It's only been a very short sample size, and he started last year very good as well. But, you know, credit to him in getting Draisaitl signed for 8.5 long term. I mean, that's looking like a huge bargain right now.
You know, I think about Draisaitl and, you know, being the best draft pick of the Oilers the last 20 years, if you're not the number one overall. You know, I think about the Puljujärvi draft too. I mean, wasn't the, you know, the decisions the Oilers made to take Draisaitl at 4, wasn't Sam Bennett 5?
They took Draisaitl at 3.
Sorry, at 3.
But Bennett, you know, went 4. Sam Reinhart went 2nd.
Yeah. Because there were people banging the drum for Sam Bennett for sure over Draisaitl that draft. And to me, I mean, I'm not saying Sam Bennett is.
Yeah,
he's certainly, you know, an NHL player, and Puljujärvi is not in the NHL right now. But, you know, teams do roll the dice, and they're making these decisions. You know, what if we had, you know, the Oilers had taken Bennett instead, right? Yeah. We'd be a very different conversation.
What if the McDavid, everybody assumes that they finished last that year and won the lottery. They didn't. Like, no. You know, they won it from what? 28th or
how? They went from third last.
Third last, however many teams were in the league at that point. But yeah, I mean, had they not won that, where would they be right now? Seattle?
Maybe. The Oilers also got Darnell Nurse at 7. That was when, you know, those two picks were Craig McTavish's when he was the GM. So Nurse at 7 and Leon at 3 are pretty good picks.
Yeah. Eberle, what was Eberle? 22nd.
22nd,
yeah.
Well, you know, you want to go back in the time machine and play alternate universe. What if, you know, I don't think you're trading Taylor Hall if you're not drafting Connor McDavid.
No.
Anyway. Yeah. Yes, we'll play alternate universe some other day. That's the Oil Spills podcast for today. You can subscribe to Oil Spills via Apple's podcast app, Google Play, Spotify, or wherever you may access your podcasts.